This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Crypto, fan tokens and NFTs. What's it got to do with football? You may know everything about it, you may know nothing. You might be wondering why John Terry wants you to buy a picture of a monkey or why Paul Pogba owns some dragons. You might be wondering why clubs are joining forces with crypto and selling fan tokens. Is it the future? Are we the Luddites who in 30 years will wish we'd got on this train? Or is this another chance for rich people to get richer, for clubs to extract more money from their fans and for players to make more money that they don't really need? You've asked lots of questions. We hopefully have some answers, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. So to begin with, we're going to find out what cryptocurrency is, what an NFT is. Roscoe says, will you and Barry be inviting someone under the age of 40 who actually understands what these things are? Lee says, we've heard Barry's disdain for a lot of shit over the years, but his take on NFT is going to be poetry. I know it. And Daniel says, are you a BTC or an ETH man, Max? Which obviously, well, I'm BTC till I die, but I don't know what it means. So joining us to begin with is Alex Hearn, whose head is in his hands already, who is the UK technology editor for The Guardian. Alex, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
Treat us like the idiots that you think we are, okay? Let's go with question one. What is cryptocurrency?
Oh God. Cryptocurrency is, what should we do? A digital native asset class. It is digital money. It is programmable currency. Those are like the high level explanations. What it actually is a class of sort of software projects, all of which work in the same basic way using blockchains, a concept that was first implemented by Bitcoin, this groundbreaking digital currency, which is likened to digital gold, to create a sort of decentralized network of people, users, computers, that can then be used to effectively and importantly prove that they own digital assets, prove that they own a certain amount of Bitcoin, a certain amount of Ethereum, or as you get more esoteric, a picture of a monkey or a fractional portion of a purchased copy of an art book of the Dune movie.
Right. So
I'm already tremendously confused.
So I think I understand that. So Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, and there are lots of different cryptocurrencies, right? And they are like unregulated banks, are they?
No, they're more like unregulated currencies. I mean, Bitcoin, the original cryptocurrency, is simple in comparison. Bitcoin tries to solve the problem of how you have proof that someone has a certain amount of money without any centralized authority. You know, if you have money in a bank account, the way that works is everyone trusts the bank when the bank says you have 500 quid in there. If you remove the bank, if you remove that centralized point of trust, how do you prove that you have 500 quid when you could just, you know, like edit the Excel spreadsheet on your computer, says you've got £1,000, you've doubled your money. How do you do it? Bitcoin has a genuinely like really novel technological solution to that, which I will not go into here, but it is the proof of work blockchain. And what it means is that it is a network of users of Bitcoin, all of which can trust that everyone else has the amount of Bitcoin that they say they do. It's not possible to just go in and edit a file on your computer and double the amount of Bitcoin you have. And also there is no centralized authority that regulates how much Bitcoin everyone has. So it's this completely decentralized, trustless money. And from there, the cryptocurrency sector is building ideas on top of that. What if as well as money, you could trade pictures of monkeys? I mean, I keep coming back to that, but that is a thing. What if, as well as money, you could have contracts that were part of that same programmable network? So rather than just saying, I promise to pay you back, you write into the code of the network that the money will be paid back in a month. All of these things spiral until you end up with some of the really odd businesses that have been launched recently.
Is it safe? I mean, it's unregulated. Is it the future? I mean, Barry and I are laughing about it. In like 30 years, are we going to be devastated that we didn't put all our money into Bitcoin?
I mean, so let me preface this with my own story. In 2012, I called Bitcoin a bubble, at the point at which one Bitcoin was worth $34. If I'd spent my day's wage on buying Bitcoin rather than writing that article, I would have about £80,000 now. So don't listen to my predictions. I've been incredibly wrong. I wouldn't say it's safe. I wouldn't say it is, in the state it is now, a sure thing in any way. The wild fly-by-night nature of this sector still, and Bitcoin is as old as the iPhone. This is not actually new. What it is something that's taken a very long time to reach mainstream interest and will take, if it ever does, an even longer time to provide actual utility to most people in the world. Because it's got this fly-by-night nature, it is a home for almost every sort of financial activity that is illegal in the conventional economy. It is also a home for some types of financial activity that are impractical in the conventional economy. And the foundational argument in this entire sector is whether any given example is the former or the latter of that.
And Alex, for the benefit of the thickies at the back, and I include myself very much among them, why are we having this conversation on a football podcast?
Two main reasons. One is that the sector is now incredibly flush with money. And as with any suddenly rich sector that needs to attract users endlessly, it's spending that on advertising. And some of that advertising comes in the form of sponsorships of football teams. It comes in the form of partnerships with football teams. It's buying credibility from football. It's also looking to football for a new market to expand into, providing services more directly for football fans. Concepts like fan tokens, which purport to allow fans to buy a portion of control of say in how their team is run, to just, I mean, gambling, like straightforward taking betting that you would get in the off crypto space and giving it a new technological sheen and letting people invest in it. I mean, the most crypto story that has nothing to do with crypto in the last 5 years is Football Index, which has everything in common with the things I see in the crypto world, except bizarrely, it wasn't crypto. And that was their big mistake. If it was in this sector, I think it would still be going and people would still be wondering how it was economical, but it would have had just that much more money flowing in and take that much longer to go under.
So before we do fan tokens, mm-hmm. can we do NFTs, which are non-fungible mm-hmm. tokens? I wrote an article about it, and I still don't know what they are, based on Paul Pogba telling me that he'd come across some dragon eggs, and he was very excited about them. Yeah. And I thought maybe he was on LSD. So what is a non-fungible token?
So there's the tech answer. A non-fungible token is a way of using this cryptocurrency underpinning to sell things that are not like money and more like art. Non-fungible is a term from economics that means kind of two examples of it are not replaceable. Oil, money, lumber are fungible items. If you have a barrel of oil, you don't care which oil it is. An artwork is non-fungible. I don't go up to you and say, I'll trade you two arts for one art. That would be nonsensical. Each individual piece of art is its own thing. A non-fungible token is a way of taking that idea to cryptocurrency. You can trade a Bitcoin for a Bitcoin. You don't care what Bitcoin it is. But if someone creates 10,000 pictures of monkeys and puts them on the blockchain, you then have 10,000 individually unique examples of an item, an asset that can still be traded on the Bitcoin, can still be written into all of these smart contracts, can still be sent from one wallet to another wallet without anyone needing to reveal their real identity, but which are also individually unique. One ape might be more valuable than another because it has a rare hat on. I mean, the thing is, this is the problem, right? When you get from the technology, which is, I can absolutely see, exciting and sounds innovative, sounds like it has potential. When you step from the technology to the concrete examples, it just gets irredeemably silly in a way that often makes it sound like I'm being uncharitable. But I really don't think I am. I think the examples of this, when you actually drill down to them, the most common reaction I get when I'm describing this stuff is, oh, he must be, you know, simplifying for us. It can't possibly be this dumb. It is. Like, a lot of this is this dumb. The reason why people are excited about spending money on these things is because people are spending money on these things. There's a circularity to this, which is perhaps legitimate. I can't explain objectively why Salvador Mundi, the Leonardo supposed painting, is worth $325 million, but it is because someone wanted to buy that. And that could be the case for the monkey pictures as well. It could just be that there's millions of people out there with taste that is fundamentally alien to me who want to own these things and who enjoy spending lots of money on it. Or it could be that it is a gigantic Ponzi scheme that relies on more and more money flowing in to give excess returns to the people who are already in the system and will one day leave the last lot of people as bag holders with assets and cryptocurrencies that are worth far, far less than they ever paid for them. The value of these decentralized assets will increase if more people get into them, and that there are millions and billions at the wider class invested in this sector. That means that there is a huge economic incentive to get more people involved. I think that underscores an awful lot of why we're seeing these adverts, why we're seeing these celebrities promoting them, why so much of football has got involved, because the grinding economic reality of this sector is it needs to get as big as possible, as quickly as possible, or the wheels come off.
So if I buy a monkey, Barry can't buy that monkey. But Barry could, Barry could presumably still like tweet a picture of the monkey that's my monkey, but it's not his monkey.
And now we get to part of the crux of NFTs, at least. So when we say monkeys, we are talking about a specific class of NFT, which is called the Bored Ape Yacht Club, which is a collection of 10,000, I think it's 10,000, might be 100,000, pictures of apes, all of which have kind of in a football sticker way, different levels of rarity assigned to them. But each of those pictures, there is only one Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT that represents that monkey. And yeah, if you own monkey number 9090, no one else can own monkey 9090. Now, the problem is owning that monkey doesn't mean anything. You don't have the picture. Barry can have the picture. Barry can right click and save as on that picture. You don't have any legal right to use that monkey because the terms of copyright that Bored Ape Yacht Club, that the company, the organization that created them under, it offers you a license to use that monkey, but you don't own the copyright to it. It is that the argument that promoters of this sector make is that in time, copyright and our norms of ownership will be rewritten such that owning an NFT really does mean that you have practical use value from the thing you own. Now it's a self-reinforcing system, right? What you own is important because everyone else who is in the system also agrees that owning it is important. But when you turn to non-believers, it can be a bit emperor's new clothesy, right? It can start looking like there is absolutely nothing there.
And what are fan tokens? I've seen this sort of Socios handle. Are all fan tokens Socios, or are there lots of different fan tokens, and what do they mean?
There's lots of different fan tokens. I mean, fan tokens exist outside of football. The general concept is wider than that. The basic idea is you are selling a digital asset, in this case, a fan token. This is a fungible token, not a non-fungible token, for those keeping track. You're selling a digital asset to people and you're promising them that it has some use beyond, you know, just own this and hope you can sell it for a profit. The fan token use is, whoever's issuing the token can decide on the use, but in football we get things like voting on like fripperies around the edges. You don't see many people saying we'll let you use fan tokens to approve transfers, but you sometimes do see it being like, we'll let you approve like the third team strip, we'll let you vote on who the next Q&A should be in the next like week's podcast. And the idea is that you're kind of mixing an investment in Not the team, because again, that would be illegal. You're not selling stocks or shares. An investment in this asset class with the ability to do something with it. And the promise is that as fan tokens become more important, if you want to make a little bit of profit, you can sell some of them. If you want to have more of a say, you can buy more. it is tying this economic pitch of invest, make money, get profit with a use pitch of, and this is why people will want to buy it from you. It's not a hollow Ponzi scheme. It is something that actually has real use. You know, if that pitch comes out, then we should see fan tokens around the world sort of roughly stabilize at a value that is vaguely commensurate to their use and become a long-term thing. For me, I question a lot. I question the whole concept, but...
Finally, Amateur Lobster says, I expect this will focus this podcast on all the crypto scams, which is fair. There are a lot about. I hope there's some balance. For example, in the dot-com bubble, some companies made it, some failed, some were scams. You'd be considered a Luddite now if you'd objected to that new technology. Is that fair?
That's the optimist's argument. The optimist's argument is that this is the early days of the internet. We're seeing a technology which is hugely powerful, creating a lot of excitement, and in that excitement come scam artists, but that doesn't mean there's nothing there. You know, a literal gold rush has huge amounts of scams, broken lives, failed dreams, but it also has gold. And the defense here is that there is gold in them hills. I have my doubts. I think 13 years is an awfully long time for us to be defending something as nascent. You know, I brought up the comparison with the iPhone. Bitcoin is as old as the iPhone. The iPhone has transformed society in 13 years and Bitcoin hasn't. It is legitimate to me to start saying this is a mature technology and there still aren't mature mainstream use cases built on it. Can we really say that this isn't something inherent to the technology that is leading to this? I think for me, the problem is that, and we're getting a, you know, this is what I would say on a tech podcast rather than a football podcast, and perhaps it's a bit too wildly off topic, but what is exciting about this technology inherently is its ability to evade old sources of power. And the most important of those old sources of power is the state and law enforcement. And that feels like a really, really fundamental benefit of this technology. If you want that, if you are a dissident in a locked down nation where your spending is tracked and you cannot buy web time to host your illegal website, then a currency which has no possibility of government censorship is fantastic. But if you're in a modern democratic state, I think we should be a lot more concerned about what upending old strictures of power means. I think fundamentally, this sounds really, really, really weird, but like fundamentally, I think the people who have power right now, for all of their problems, it is better that they have power in the institutions that have been built up over centuries to give us the stability that we rely on in our daily lives than that we burn it all to the ground and start again. And that to me is the fundamental promise of this sector. It's burn it to the ground and start again. And I kind of think that that's a lot of people in it don't really realize that that's the implicit dream they're offering here. And some people do. And to them, I kind of say more power you, right? Like people have always wanted to burn things to the ground and start again. And if that's your pitch here, then great. But if what you're actually pitching is fans can vote on next season's colors and you're doing that by implicitly saying also let's destroy democracy, I kind of think there's a risk reward thing there that I don't sign up for.
There's a jump, isn't there, from Luton's away kit to tearing down the walls. Alex, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. For the rest of the pod, we have a panel. Barry and I are what I would describe as ignorant cynics. Barry, are you happy with that description?
I'd say I'm ignorant. I'm not okay. necessarily cynical because that's how ignorant I am. I'm so ignorant I don't know whether or not I should be cynical. I expect this may very well be my final contribution to this podcast. So apart from saying goodbye at the end.
Fraser says, please tell me that Philippe Auclair will be involved. He usually has things to say. He is. And I believe you do have things to say, Philippe.
I hope so. And I hope they will make sense.
Marvellous. James Harder is with us. Hey, James.
Hi, Max. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. You work at Virginia Tech in the US. And despite our anti-American bias, you got in touch with the pod. What do you do and why did you get in touch with us?
Yeah, I'm happy to help you guys with the anti-American bias. And my day job is, as you mentioned, at Virginia Tech, I manage the blockchain initiative there. So I help students kind of think about some of the things that they might do with blockchain. We manage a certificate program that people can enroll in to learn more about this technology. We have a webinar series and things like that. But I think what's happening in football is really exciting. And I'm really excited to talk a bit about more about that here today.
Cool. Also with us, Peter McCormack, you also got in touch with us after listening to us talk about NFTs and cryptocurrency. What's your some people will have heard of what you're doing. Explain your situation.
Yeah, I host a podcast about Bitcoin, and I've agreed on a deal to acquire a club in Bedford where I'm from, and I think some people are calling us the Bitcoin Club. So this world of cryptocurrency can be quite confusing. I'm what's known as a Bitcoin maximalist. I care really only about Bitcoin in the crypto space, and I spend most of my time trying to explain to people the difference between Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and why I think NFTs and DAOs and fan tokens are all nonsense.
So you're Bitcoin till I die, and you know, you spit in the face of Ethereum, is that correct?
Yeah, well, no, yeah, kind of. It's more just trying to explain to people the difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum and why decentralization is important. One of the ways I try and explain it, Max, is that like a bicycle and an aeroplane both have wheels, and Ethereum and Bitcoin both have a blockchain, but they're entirely different things trying to do entirely different things, and sometimes they get lumped together, and you know, that's quite that's a bit of a frustrating pain point for people who are proponents of Bitcoin.
Right, so let's start then with your plans for Bedford FC. What are you trying to do? Sort of read some pretty ambitious things that you wanted to take Bedford FC, who are currently in the 10th tier of English football. Good 4-0 win away at Wellingborough. Tough place to go at the weekend. You want to take them to the Premier League using cryptocurrency. Is that an oversimplification?
Yeah, it's not entirely right. I think the Premier League thing's got to been taken a bit too far. I've always felt like Bedford as a town could support a league club, whether that's League Two, League One, Championship, Premier League, whatever. But we're a population of 174,000 people, but we've never had a team in the league, and we've got Bedford FC in the 10th tier and Bedford Town in the 8th. And I've always felt we could support it, but it just, no one's ever had the plan that's made that happen. And it's something I've been trying to do for years. I've just got myself in this fortunate position in that my podcast is probably the biggest one about Bitcoin. It's I guess over 1 million listeners a month, and I'm connected to all the important people involved in Bitcoin. So for me, it was like, well, what can I do to leverage that community to make this work? Can I create a club that the Bitcoiners around the world can get behind? They can call it their club. The Bitcoiners are quite a passionate bunch. So if I created the Bitcoin team, would they get behind that? And I've had, you know, a relative amount of success in the first few weeks. So to me, that allowed me to create a model that would work. And then working with the sponsors, I've sold something like £750,000 of sponsorship in the last 4 weeks for a club in the 10th tier is, you know, quite amazing. And you know, once we've got merchandise and shirt sales out there, I think we can have the revenue model year one of a say a low league two club. But that gives us the opportunity, therefore, to sign the players and get the right people in place to make this happen. And we have signed some players the last 2 weeks. Last week we had a couple of good wins, and hopefully we're going to make a march to get into the playoffs this season.
I was going to say, Peter, how exactly does it work? Can we draw a parallel between what you're trying to do and fan ownership, for example?
No. Yeah. So some people have asked that, and you know, I have had people get in touch and saying, "Can we have, you know, can we buy shares in the club? Can we have fan ownership? And can we have fan voting?" At some point, we may allow people to buy, you know, into the club, and be owners as you can in any business. But my view is that all these ideas around getting fans to, be a fan-owned club and vote on the running of the club, I always think they're fraught with danger. I'm a businessman. I've run multiple businesses, and I think businesses need to be dictatorships. Maybe with a board, but somebody at the top just making the decisions, taking responsibility. Because, even in the 4 weeks I've been doing this, I've been amazed at everything involved in running a club. And the last thing I want to do is put all these decisions to a committee who has no idea what's going on.
Peter, we're kind of limited in how much we can talk about your manifesto for the club here today, but you did quite a lengthy interview on the Price of Football podcast, and I thought you talked a very good game. But we have had cowboys come into football before taking over clubs and talking a good game, only for it to all go very pear-shaped very quickly. How do we know that isn't the case here?
Well, we don't. That's the truth. I mean, but when you start any business, whether you're starting a cafe or a tech business or a football club, you can't predict what's going to happen in 1, 5, 10 years. I mean, you don't know. This could be something that is hugely successful and a lot of people get behind this. We get a lot of international support and the sponsors love it. We create some momentum. We don't know if in 2, 3 years' time people will lose interest and that model no longer works. But all across football, there are failing clubs. I mean, what happened at Derby, I think, is devastating for their fans, and what's happened at Reading. Or you can just go through the Football League, and I mean, almost every club has had financial difficulty at one point. I'm bringing a new idea to the table. I'm bringing one whereby it's a club built around an idea rather than just the local community, and an idea which can have international reach. So the most successful clubs in the world, the Tottenhams and Liverpools, Chelsea's, Arsenal's, Man United's, they have this large international footprint. And what I'm trying to say is, if you base a football club around an idea, can a small club have an international footprint, and can that actually make it a little bit easier on the financial side of things? But no, look, we don't know if this will work. One of the things that we will do differently is that I think there's a lot of shady dealings perhaps that goes on behind closed doors. You don't really know when a club is failing. We're going to run this entirely transparently. If you go up on the website, we've already published the financials for the first month. We're going to do that every month. And it's going to be very transparent. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to do a new model. If it works, this will be great for Bedford. It might be good for football. And if it doesn't, you'll know early on. But you can never guarantee success.
How does it work exactly in terms of the investment in the club? I mean, it's a two-pronged question. One of them is, where does the money come from? Is it from Bitcoiners? The second thing, how can you have a commercial business model which is using a cryptocurrency which might be the most successful and different from the rest, but which, for example, in the last 3 months, I've been looking at how it's quoted on the markets, and it's gone down something like 43% in the last 3 months, something like that. The last couple of weeks have been particularly challenging, shall we say. How can you build a sustainable model on a currency that is fluctuating so wildly?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So let's look at what happened with Bradford and the people who are attempting to buy them. I think that was essentially a crypto club, whereby they wanted to acquire the club, allow people to buy tokens, sell NFTs, and essentially crypto was embedded into the success of the club. We're not doing that. The acquisition is for cash. I'm buying it for cash, and I will own the club. There is no requirement for any fan to buy Bitcoin. There's no requirement for anyone within the club to be paid in Bitcoin. I just myself have chosen to operate the club on a Bitcoin standard. So what that means is, whilst we are a pound-based business, we will sell things in the pounds, what we will do is our long-term profits, which we don't intend to spend, they will be held in a Bitcoin treasury. So volatility is one of those things that is widely misunderstood with Bitcoin. And yes, it's jumped up and down, but the money I personally hold in Bitcoin is the kind of money I intend to hold for 5, 10, 20 years. So I can ride out the volatility and tend to just kind of ignore it. It's a similar thing with the club. Our first year revenue, we're targeting 1.5 million on a budget of 300,000. After we've paid off HMRC, whatever we've got left, the 1.2 million, a portion, not all of it, a portion of that will be put into our Bitcoin treasury, and something we won't intend to touch for years. But when people say they're a Bitcoin club, there is there is no necessity for anyone to buy Bitcoin, get involved in Bitcoin with our club. For me, it's really just how I choose to operate the financial underpinning of the club, to plan for kind of future investment. And it's how I leverage a community to get behind this idea.
So a couple of questions for me. One is the Bitcoin kind of relevant? I mean, that's just how you've made your money, right? It's like the Venkis made their money in chicken, but they didn't buy players with chickens. Like, just the Bitcoin doesn't necessarily make any difference, does it? Or does it?
Yes and no. I mean, the most important part is the leverage I have hosting the podcast and knowing people. You know, we will have an orange shirt, which is the Bitcoin color, and we will have a Bitcoin logo on the shirt. And so that is a deliberate move, because what I know is I can sell thousands, maybe tens of thousands of those shirts to the Bitcoiners around the world, which supports our commercial model. So it's leveraging the community. But at the same time, whilst nobody is required to be paid in Bitcoin, or no one's required to pay in Bitcoin, you know, if somebody comes to the ground and they want to buy their ticket with Bitcoin, which will happen because Bitcoiners will come to the ground, we'll accept it. And if a player turns around and says, you know what, Pete, can I get my bonus in Bitcoin? It's like, yeah, absolutely. We will allow that to happen. And we will teach people about what Bitcoin is, what it means, how it works, why it's different from all these other cryptocurrencies. What I'm saying is there's no necessity for it. And then the second point is that, as I said, the underpinning of our like financial planning for the future is that we will operate a Bitcoin standard, in that we will hold long-term treasury positions in Bitcoin. Because we, you know, I have this fundamental belief in it being the best form of money.
And do you actually own the club, like right now?
So, no. But we're right at the... Basically, this is one of the things I've been learning about, is the process that you have to go through, committee meetings, approvals as such. So we've agreed on a deal to acquire the club. We've agreed on all the terms. We're just waiting for like certain parts of the legal process to go through.
Right, and is that a formality, or is there a chance that you actually won't own it? And if you couldn't, would you still invest in them, if you see what I mean?
No, it's an absolute formality. It's, yeah.
James, does this sound sensible to you?
You know, I think it's interesting what they're doing there at this club, but I also think, as someone who does kind of by what blockchain and the potential of something like a DAO could be, I think that there's a pure play that has a more decentralized nature that could be successful. And I'll almost guarantee to you someone else will try it. And I think it might be a bit of a more pure play where you might sell, you know, 300 tokens for $10,000 to create 3 million in leverage that you could buy a club with. And then, you know, 151 votes gets your decisions made. And I think that's kind of what blockchain is kind of built on, is this decentralized way of organizing that doesn't have the hierarchies, that doesn't have that kind of strongman at the top. And I think that'll be an interesting thing to see. And I almost guarantee you someone will try that or attempt that at some point in time, especially as the way that I think Peter's Club is organized, kind of coming from a lower tier and looking at a way to kind of leverage, because I think there's an opening for doing that kind of thing.
But I have to ask you, you say there are no hierarchies. I would argue there are loads of hierarchies between especially the people who moved in early and the people who've jumped on the wagon. It's a bit like Snowpiercer. You've got the guy in the front car. He's doing very well indeed, and he's having Chateau Margaux with his dinner. And then you've got the guys who are eating processed beetles and whatever in the back of the car. And so there is a hierarchy, which is one of the major problems, by the way, of what crypto is doing in football at the moment. Not in the way that Peter is presenting it, but in other ways that crypto is being used and blockchain technology is used, so to speak, to sell stuff by people who moved in before everybody else. And then afterwards, who is left? You know, you're at the bottom of the food chain.
I think you're absolutely right. And I do think that, you know, the starting gun has been fired on these types of things. But at some point in time, that was going to happen. And I think that as different ways of organizing start to take hold, you'll see some of those advantages that are built into, you know, the first 10 years of blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies being an interesting thing in the world. I don't necessarily know that completely flattens the playing field, but I do think it is flatter. And I think there are reasons to be optimistic about the ways that that might happen. And, you know, some of these things like fan tokens that we were kind of pivoting to start to talk about. I mean, when Arsenal is offering a fan token, again, that's not a blockchain pure play. That's a major institution offering something that they're benefiting from. And I think the fan token game is just not... It seems unethical to decentralization that blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies really believe in.
Right. And we will go into fan tokens, NFTs, crypto, and links with football clubs in just a second. Welcome to part 3 of the Guardian Football Weekly. So, James, you just mentioned Arsenal there. Last month, the UK Advertising Standards Authority slapped down Arsenal's promotion of Socios fan tokens, deeming that the club trivialised investment in crypto assets, took advantage of consumers' inexperience or credulity in a promotion for Socios that featured 3 first-team players. It was a landmark ruling because up until that point, fan tokens had been virtually untouched by regulation, being classified as, quote, utility tokens rather than cryptocurrencies or crypto assets. Arsenal said it would seek an independent review of the ruling to seek greater clarity on the ASA's current position. An Arsenal spokesperson said, "We take our responsibilities with regard to marketing to our fans very seriously. We carefully considered the communications to fans regarding our promotions and provided information regarding financial risks." There is a question, though, Philippe. Should clubs be doing their due diligence or more due diligence on these kind of deals?
Yeah, they should, and they're not doing it. And we've had multiple examples of that, some of which will absolutely, are mind-blowing. We had the example, for example, of Manchester City teaming up with a company called 3Key. And it's only after teaming up and announcing a deal with this so-called fan engagement platform and making them their partner in this business that actually, by the work of a few journalists, it was realized that 3Key actually didn't really exist, that the people that Manchester City thought they were talking to didn't even have those names. And their tail between their legs, they had to move out.
And we should say that a spokesperson from Manchester City said they do conduct due diligence with respect to all their partnerships. They also said that the partnership with 3Key Technologies had been announced but had not been, quote, activated. And also that the partnership had been suspended pending satisfactory resolution to the inquiries the club were making, as you were, Philippe.
There's a case that I've been working on, and actually I've just published a piece on Yozimar, on the Yozimar website, today, as it happens, about a fan engagement company called Iconic, with 2 Qs. And this fan engagement platform managed to sign deals with AS Roma, Crystal Palace FC, a number of, with La Liga, the whole of La Liga, Valencia, Real Sociedad, Zenit St. Petersburg, FC Groningen, and so on. That was even before they had actually their own cryptocurrency, had started trading on the market. That tells you a bit of the about the due diligence that is being done. And what happened is that all these guys moved in. Some of them even, they sponsored the shirt of Real Sociedad. They were the sleeve sponsors of Marseille and AS Roma. So you think, okay, this must be legit, right? And they said they had secured 100 million euros seed capital. So everybody thought this is great. People signed. The tokens that they offered in their own cryptocurrency, of course, which is called IQQ, which you could only buy if you first had bought Bitcoin or Ethernet or stablecoin like USDT. Interrupt me if it's getting a bit confusing. They offered that finally in April 2021. Within 4 weeks of the initial coin offering, the value of the coin had moved, and I'll take a US dollar equivalent, from $0.23 to $0.5. The current value is zero, and I mean zero. And unbeknown to all of their partners, who were wondering what the hell is going on, probably, but didn't really do the due diligence, that company, Iconic, was wound up in Monaco on Christmas Eve, so that not many people noticed that, and it ceased functioning. This company had its name on the sleeves of and the shirts of number of clubs. They had sold fan tokens. They were supposed to become the next big thing. But amazingly, none of the clubs who had decided to partner with them did the due diligence I did in the matter of about 3 days, which is to find out that the CEO of that particular company had been named in a fraud case in the US to start with, that he was also linked to a real estate company which had gone bust, taking away 10 million euros of investors' money. And nobody seemed to have done that. They're so desperate to get money. It's exactly what has happened with gambling companies, especially Asian-facing gambling companies, where no questions are asked. Boxes are ticked. People are driven by this fear of missing out, FOMO, which is an acronym which is used all the time in this business. And they signed up for it. And so loads of people have lost loads of money, but I don't think the people who started these fan tokens have lost a lot of money. It was a sham. It might have been a scam. The fact is, the company no longer exists.
It's probably important to say here that, as reported in the Times last week, Crystal Palace, who announced a shirt sleeve sponsorship deal with Iconic, I-Q-O-N-I-Q, in September 2020, and suspended the partnership in February 2021 before the launch of any fan tokens or promotions, have begun legal action over missed payments from the firm. And that Kazim Attila, the chief executive of Iconic, who was named in the deposition of someone connected to the Tringenham Ponzi scheme, said that the company had been severely affected by the pandemic, but insisted it was still operating and would now move from Monaco to another country. Philippe, despite all this, some people would argue this is all part of the world of making investments.
They are not investments. They are not investments. They are gambles. It's a gambling environment which is used by people who will, if the guys were there with me, they would say, you don't understand what's going on. They would start using all this vocabulary that I don't understand and trying to make me understand that, trying to make me feel that I'm really missing out on something. Guy, you don't understand what's going on. It's a revolution, blah, 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 blah. And they would use all that is good in blockchain technology, because there is good stuff in blockchain technology, genuinely good stuff, promising, to sell snake oil. And which is why I now describe fan tokens and crypto, you know, to talk in very, very, very wide terms, cryptocurrency and fan tokens. For me, it's showing blockchain technology as a kind of asbestos. What it does, asbestos does, which is insulating, it does fantastically well. That's why it was used. Unfortunately, it also gives you cancer, which is why you cannot use it anymore. And I think the need for regulation of what is happening in football at the moment should make us look at this kind of offer. I'm not talking about what Peter is doing here, but this kind of offer that you're seeing everywhere, which is everywhere in every Premier League ground, you should look at it as a kind of virtual asbestos and do what is needed to be done to at least regulate what's going on, if not to outlaw it completely. There's another other side of Bitcoin in football that we have to mention, is the fact that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, by the way, Ethereum and many others, are becoming the currency of choice for illegal gambling and money laundering on the gambling markets. The gambling market is worth at least $1 trillion a year. This is a lot of money. And I was reading a report done by the Asian Racing Federation, which is an organization which probably looks at illegal betting and illegal gambling better than anybody else. And let me just read you a paragraph from that. As a measure of the growth of cryptocurrency and betting, Bitcoin is now accepted on at least 127 offshore sports betting websites, 284 online casinos. At least 780 offshore websites accept one or more of the five biggest cryptocurrencies. These offshore websites are totally unregulated, are used by criminal organizations to launder money through gambling, in particular on football games. And Bitcoin is facilitating what they are doing by making the transaction absolutely untraceable. That's another problem. And I know that's not your problem, Peter, but it's another aspect of the question which has to be borne in mind when we talk about the merits of using these cryptocurrencies in a sports environment.
But again, you know, we have to, if we're going to raise issues like that, we have to be balanced and fair. Criminals and money launderers, they use mobile phones. We don't ban mobile phones. They use the internet. We don't ban the internet. And we have to look at the good. For every you know, illegal transaction that you can raise and say, oh, somebody did some illegal betting here. I'll explain to you how in Nigeria during the NSARS movement, where the secret police in Nigeria were brutalizing people and protesters were trying to, you know, campaign against this, they were able to receive Bitcoin, which is the most liquid digital currency in the world, and be able to actually strike. I can explain to you how in Belarus, which is now a dictatorship, where there was a strike by government workers, they were able to receive Bitcoin and be able to actually survive and support their family. I can explain to you how in Venezuela, when the currency collapsed and people could not afford to buy food, they were able to receive money from their family around the world again and be able to sell that in a liquid market. So yes, there will always be criminals. And if you get rid of Bitcoin, they will find a way around it and they will use other things. But at the same time, the same people who always want to point to this 0.01% of criminal activity fail to look at the larger benefits that we get for Bitcoin around the world in protecting the people against inflation, protecting people against authoritarian rule.
James, can you, a lot of people ask us about NFTs. In many ways, they're the thing that people have seen the most because they're all over Twitter. And obviously the footballers who tweet about them have really big followings, or on Instagram or whatever, you know, John Terry and his apes, Paul Pogba and his dragons, amongst other things. I think Jack Wilshere did one the other day. Alex explained in part one what they are. Is there any good thing about them?
You know, I think there is something. You know, I'm used to kind of living in Alex's space and having a healthy skepticism about these things, but I do think I can also breathe life into why there are reasons for optimism. And really, Alex actually mentioned this in what he was saying, is like, this is a way to value digital art. That's something that's really a breakthrough in the ways that we kind of organize the world. And I think that it's really important to think about the ways that that changes things. And, you know, I think we'll start to see where blockchain, NFTs, and cryptocurrencies are the ways that people organize themselves in the world. I mean, football is moving into a space where the metaverse, things like Roblox, things like a Gucci bag that sells in the metaverse can actually be worth more than a Gucci bag that's actually in real life. I mean, we're seeing the world drastically change in the ways that we're organizing. And I think that football really should start to think about ways that people who are in that like decentralized, oftentimes counterculture movements that NFT communities kind of represent, might start to represent their own voices by putting some NFTs forward. I mean, I think it's easy to, and definitely right, to take pot shots at John Terry or Arsenal fan tokens. Those things aren't very good, but I mean, someone could very easily offer as a counter to the Arsenal fan token, you know, a 10,000 NFT drop that said like, people, we'd rather own Arsenal than Stan Kroenke. I mean, I also think that we should give some like life to, we want to see creativity and art and interesting things be produced so football can kind of move into that space where it might appeal to a younger generation. And I think, you know, NFTs around Jose Mourinho and, you know, great quotes that he has, or, you know, parking the bus themed NFTs. I mean, I think there's a creative, interesting generation that needs to put the screws to kind of what's going on and use this as a way to give voice to, you know, political opposition and countercultural movements.
So is the problem then not really the NFT itself? It's who is hawking the NFT. If it's some multimillionaire who's just doing it because someone said, here, you can make some more money, it's different to a bit like art, right? It's different to an up-and-coming artist who is trying to sell, you know, sell their wares because that's what they do. They're a digital artist, which is a thing already and is something that presumably will grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, I think you hit it spot on there. This is just kind of a new way of organizing the world. And, you know, the devil is kind of in the details and who's behind them. But I also can say that, like, there are some very interesting things, especially that are happening in, like, the music industry that create, kind of break down the barriers in between people who are fans of an artist and the artist themselves. People that sell tokens directly to their fans oftentimes offer things like free access to concerts. Recently, the Kings of Leon came out with an album they only released as an NFT. And, you know, there was a tier of that that just gave you the digital album, but there was also a tier of that that gave fans access to art that was produced by the band. And even one of the like higher up ones was a free ticket to any Kings of Leon concert that's ever going to happen in the future. And you could sit in the front row. And like, I think that kind of way of thinking about how we can break down the barriers that are presented by things like Spotify, record companies, is at some point in time going to come to the world of football. And I think that there will be some interesting applications once we can sift through, you know, where is the gold and where is the like nefarious actors that we need the 50 Philippes to come find?
Well, Spotify is one of those, I can tell you. As a musician who's been everywhere, we see everything. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
There are two things. Okay. When I hear you, first of all, I get the feeling, pardon me if I'm wrong, that I'm not talking to somebody who is talking about business and economy, but I'm talking to a libertarian. I'm talking about somebody who is talking about ethics, politics, rather than somebody who is talking about the economy. That's the first thing. Am I wrong or am I right? The second thing to say, and going with that is the fact that for me, what I see with NFTs, which are proposed, you know, by John Terry, who's probably paid a lot of money to promote those guys, it's a top-down system at the moment. It's not equalitarian. It's exactly the Spotify model. It's great for the 0.5% at the top of the tree. Everybody else, all you get is rotten fruit, which has fallen, and there's not much of it. And I can't see how NFTs could miraculously be different. You know, even if you can see that the technology is fantastic in itself, you can also see that it's a bit like guns, okay? If you say, well, guns are not dangerous, it's whoever fires them. Well, I'll tell you, no, I think guns are dangerous in themselves. And I think NFTs in themselves have got, despite all the libertarian, equalitarian flavor of it, they've got this top-down thing which is absolutely ingrained in it. It's whoever creates and starts is the one that will make the money. The rest will be there trying, honestly, just getting crumbs. I should stop, Max, because I could rant on for ages, I suppose. Because one thing, yes, the last thing I want to say is that how can scarcity in itself be a foundation for value? Because that's what it's all about. What makes an NFT valuable? Or you now see the guys from SoRare who are selling those kind of Panini figures, but NFT as NFTs. What makes them expensive, valuable, is their scarcity. But scarcity in itself is not a foundation for value. Otherwise, we'd still be investing our money in tulip bulbs, wouldn't we?
You know, and the thing that I'll take your points in order there. First off, I'm kind of breathing life into a community that I definitely think the community would easily be labeled as libertarian. I don't know that those views are even my own, but I certainly think that the blockchain cryptocurrency communities would feel very comfortable with a label like libertarian. As for NFTs, I think you're right that there are the kind of crumbs that fall to the small actors. And, you know, the Winklevoss twins are sometimes the winners of owning Nifty Gateway, and they're taking a profit piece of every NFT sold on their platforms. And there's reasons to be deeply skeptical about the ways that those things are happening. But I also think that that's a pendulum that swings back and forth. And I think that we're not going to thread the needle and get it to a place where it settles in toward, you know, maybe we can call that where Bitcoin is at this point in time, to where it's been accepted. It's starting to be bought by, you know, major US financial institutions, their ETFs. And, you know, it's kind of looked at as like a reasonable asset class to invest in. And I think that NFTs and other things that are on smart contracts and built onto blockchain are still in that deep, like the pendulum is swinging way out and in opposite directions. And that does oftentimes result as the big powers winning. And I think that's a big debate that we have in, you know, our certificate program in the blockchain community. If you look at CoinDesk and some of the articles that are about this, is like, are we just reinforcing the existing powers in the world, or is there some opportunity for us to actually create something new? And I think that in some ways, the record at this point in time is still kind of favoring the former of that. And, you know, I think that is sad to see. And I hope that that pendulum starts to swing back out. But could this be a Ponzi scheme that just falls apart? I think Alex is right to kind of highlight that in the intro.
I have to say, Max, I can't stop thinking about Venky's using chickens as a currency to buy players. How much poultry do you think they gave Gillingham for Bradley Dack?
Yeah, but you could have, you know, we've got bored apes, we could have bored chickens.
Well, look, I'm just pleased you're awake, Barry, that I was starting to get nervous. But look.
This has reminded me of that David Ferrer press conference I attended that was conducted entirely in Spanish and didn't have an interpreter.
Can I thank everybody for coming on? Because I think we have learned stuff. I think I certainly know more than I did an hour ago. I think that was the idea of this. I suspect we're going to revisit this subject because I imagine, certainly when Bedford FC are in League One, and, you know, the fans are furious with you, Peter, and we'll cover it again for selling their best player with Ethereum, swapping it for an NFT of a monkey. We'll get you back on. But thank you so much, both of you, actually, Peter and James, for getting in touch with us and being part of this conversation, because otherwise it would have just been Philippe telling us what was wrong with the world and us all just nodding along because we don't know anything. Philippe, thank you, mate.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck. James, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Especially for getting up so early in the morning. Appreciate that. Cheers, Barry. I'm not sure what you did, but it's always gold.
Oh, yeah. Great.
All right. Well, not gold. It's always Bitcoin. thank you so much. We'll be back on Wednesday.
This is The Guardian.